and welcome to the 12th episode of the 6th season of the Ubuntu podcast. In this episode, we're going to talk to Rick Spencer about Ubuntu engineering. We've got another time-saving tip, have we? In command line love.
Yes, we have.
Okay. And we'll read your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Alan, and joining me is Laura.
Hello.
And Mark.
Hello.
And Tony.
Hello.
Oh dear.
I don't know.
It sounds like a barbershop quartet.
I'm not doing it. So, Laura, what have you been up to?
It's my birthday.
And you'll cry today. If you want to.
Is it today?
No, it was at the weekend.
Okay.
But We just finished the cake.
We did, and delightful cake it was too. Did you make it?
No.
What?
Was it from a locally sourced food supplier?
Hey, sort of.
That was a particularly evil.
It depends where you mean local to.
It came on public transport.
It did.
Yeah.
Yes.
What have you been up to then?
We went to BFI Day at BFI Doctor Who Day in London.
Who'd have thought?
Yes, it was very good though.
It was very good, and actually,
I'll get to you in a minute, Tony.
And the actual story was one that I actually enjoyed watching.
Which era?
Fifth Doctor, so Peter Davidson.
Oh right.
So yes.
Oh.
You can hear what we thought of it on the Facebook version of the Doctor Who podcast, which you can find at thedoctorwhopodcast.com.
That's about enough of that.
Yeah, we did put the UPC on there as well.
I should hope so.
Did you? Yeah. I mean, none of them knew what you were talking about, did they?
They've listened to one episode.
Have they?
Yeah.
No idea what we talked about.
Was it one where you talked all about Doctor Who?
No.
Oh, okay. How about you, Mark? What have you been up to?
Not a lot, really, I'm afraid. How about you?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've just realised your entry in this is blank.
Yes.
Yes.
What about you, Tony?
Well, I went to see the Reduced Shakespeare Company doing their Complete Works of Shakespeare Abridged show, which they're touring around the UK at the moment.
Go and see it.
Yes, it was very good.
And how long do they take to do the whole works of Shakespeare?
It's about an hour and a half.
Wow.
With an interval. So, it's under 2 hours in total.
Brilliant.
It's very funny, and I got to go up on stage and run around like a fool. I've seen the show 3 times in about 20 years. And it's very good.
Is it different people every time? Or?
Yeah, different cast members. Although one of the people who's performing it at the moment, I saw 15 years ago in the same part.
Gosh.
Who's Matt Rippey, who played Captain Jack Harkness in Torchwood.
God, Doctor Who again.
Who recognised me from Twitter, which is...
went, Tony, across the foyer.
Yeah, which implied I might be a bit stalky. I don't know. I'm not sure I came off well from that. But it's very nice. They're very nice guys.
Yes. Yeah. Go see it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Cool. Have you done anything, Alan?
I went to San Francisco, Oakland, for a canonical sprint.
Oh, cool.
And I watched... Django Unchained on the plane on the way out there.
Is that like a Python development?
No.
I think you find it's the Django Unchained.
No. It's a Tarantino film. And then I watched it again on the way back.
That's cool.
And I suddenly
had
a bit of a crush on Christoph Waltz, the German guy in the film, who's absolutely excellent.
Cool. Wow. That's good.
Should we get on with the show?
I think we better before Alan needs to lie down.
On the line now, we have Rick Spencer, who's VP of Ubuntu Engineering, live from Seattle. Hey, Rick, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Alan.
Good, good. We last spoke to you back in April 2010 at UDS in Brussels, and you were all about Qwikly, and Mark had just announced Unity in his keynote. And so how have the last 3 years been?
Super great. Yeah, it's been great. I was actually thinking about that because I remember 10 stood for 42, and that was my age then, and now I've reached a big round number.
43.
Well done, well done, Tony.
Yeah.
So last week,
still going strong.
We had a canonical sprint, and Jono blogged afterwards that there's 150 people who are focused on phone and tablet. How does that affect what we're doing for Ubuntu Desktop?
That's an interesting question. So right now, Ubuntu Desktop and Ubuntu Touch are separate things, separate code bases. But our vision is that they'll converge into the same code base. So what we are working on now, what we'll be discussing at Virtual UDS next week, what we'll be delivering for Ubuntu Touch in 13.10 should all form the basis of, you know, a common code base. We're hoping, like, as early as the 14.04 release. So
when you say,
it should affect desktop very much.
When you say that there's going to be a common code base, are you talking about the desktop moving towards what we're starting to see from the phone and tablet, rather than the phone and tablet moving to be more like what we're used to with the desktop?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer that, but I will say we think it's going to be easier to scale up from a more mobile-oriented OS than to run on desktops at the, you know, kernel plumbing level, than to take the desktop and scale it down to run on a phone, you know, at the kernel and plumbing level. So what we're hoping is that as we put in Ubuntu Touch into place, that then adding all the features at the UI level that you need for a desktop, that'll go quickly, we hope.
So you said we're hoping to have convergence by as early as 14.04. So that means we've got another release, Saucy Salamander 13.10, which will be an update in the same way that 13.04 was. What are you thinking 13.10 is going to look like?
Well, I'm really pleased with 13.04. I think it's a very sublime release. You know, Unity, even on my very small netbook, is running very smoothly. And during the whole raving cycle, like, you could use 13.04 every day. So our daily quality was really good, and I think it really showed in our release. So I'm hoping for more of the same in that in 13.10. However, I think a lot of the things that we've put into place for Ubuntu Touch, we'll start to move over for 13.04. So I think it'll be maybe have more changes, or at least more options than 13.04. Like, one thing that I'd really like the desktop team to shoot for is to have an optional session that you can install in 13.10 and choose to log in into an Ubuntu Touch session instead of a traditional desktop session.
Right. So would that be using Mir, or would that just be using the standard X that we've already got on 13.10?
Well, I'd like it to use Mir, you know, just to be a Ubuntu Touch session running on the desktop. But I don't think we'll have time to go and add all the features that you would need in a GUI for the desktop. Right. So that's why it would be optional. Like, I don't think you'll get a workspace switcher and that kind of thing, you know. So I think what I want is for 13.10 to be as stable and fast as 13.04, but there to be a bunch of new things to try, even if they're not available by default.
How do you prioritize the amount of development effort that goes into the desktop versus the mobile platform?
Well, we're really, because, like, ultimately we see them as the same code base, we're pushing really hard on Ubuntu Touch right now. So that's really the priority right now.
Is that a way of saying not much is going to go into the desktop for a while?
Well, no, we can't really say that, because when you ask me, you know, how I prioritize, well, you know, there's only part of the Ubuntu community that works for Canonical and works for me. So there's a lot of people who are doing still innovative things in 13.10 on the desktop. So I think that, you know, even if you just consider the upstreams that we get, that we sync to every cycle, there'll be a lot of changes there, but there'll be, you know, still a lot of community members who are pouring their heart and soul into the desktop. So I think there'll be, you know, a lot of contributions to the desktop. For my team, you know, not much might be a fair way of putting it, but there's still just a lot of turning the crank to make a distro. It just takes a lot of work, even if you don't do a lot of new things, just to keep it running every day.
And in that regard, talking about the amount of work, there was a subject you brought up at the last during the last cycle, which was that of possibly going to a rolling release. That didn't seem to complete in the way that you saw that vision would pan out. Do you think that's adversely affected the way 1304 has turned out, having that whole conversation, and or do you think it was good to get that out in the open, or how do you feel about that whole conversation?
Yeah, no, I don't think it had an adverse effect on 1304 as what the product was. So, well, obviously, I think a rolling release between LTSs is the right way to go. That's what I think. You know, as one person in the Ubuntu community, I think that we should release an LTS as we do now, and then have a rolling release in between, where the rolling release is good and usable every single day. You know, so I put that out there, and I kind of wanted to push harder on it, but you know, when I put it out there, some feedback, there were some things I didn't expect, that, you know, switching to a rolling release, especially suddenly, had some impacts on parts of the community, which just made it improper to just do it. You know, like when you looked at the flavors, you know, the Zubuntus and Lubuntus, like their mission is to ship a stable version of their upstream desktop experiences. And it would have been hard for them to do had we just suddenly switched to a rolling release,
right?
You know, yeah. So that was just wasn't the right time for reasons that I hadn't foreseen. So on the other hand, some people, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Do you think there would be a right time, maybe after the next LTS, to revisit this topic?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't want to, for my part, I don't think we should drop it. We should keep talking about it. But, you know, it is just one option. We're a pretty big community, and it's not, this isn't the kind of thing that, like, one person just gets to decide. You know what I mean? Like,
right. And with UDS coming up, where those kind of discussions happen, we've got that coming up next week. What are you hoping to get out of UDS?
Well, that's a good question. So so first of all, we recently switched it to a virtual UDS, and you know, I was counting, like, just in, like, the number of managers, leads, and architects that work for Canonical and contribute to Ubuntu, and there's like 35 of them. And over the last few years, we had really, like, upped our planning game and had been doing a lot of continuous planning. And so we were finding waiting, like, every 6 months to get back to a UDS to have good discussions with community members, maybe people who didn't have enough time to be doing that continuous planning. It was just, like, too long to sync. So we'd been looking for ways to be more transparent with our continuous planning, and it seemed like a virtual UDS that was every 3 months could help address that, like, just have more frequent sync points. And also, we had a lot of feedback from people, especially, like, people who are, like, key to certain upstreams, that they'd be, like, important for certain conversations, but they didn't want to travel to, like, Copenhagen for just, like, 1 hour or something, right? You know? And so we're trying virtual UDS. I think we learned a lot from the first one.
How do you feel that went? Are you confident about the next one? And do you think we'll carry on doing them every 3 months or review or what?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think it went well for what it was. One thing is, we did have a lot of backup of planning to discuss. So I was pretty aggressive about forcing one really, like, soon, which left a lot of people flat-footed. You know, they didn't really have time to change their plans and participate. But it was sort of a choice between that and to having all these plans that we were going to start working on and not doing that transparently. So I think this next one should go better because people have had a lot more lead time to plan around it, and then we've got better at the tools. But I am getting a lot of feedback. It's just like the lack of face-to-face in-person interaction is a really painful loss. And so it's not – so I think while virtual UDS has is going to address some of the issues that have come up with the fact that we're planning so much faster and so much more frequently, I still think we'll need to figure something out for that face-to-face interaction part. So
maybe we need to have a water cooler or corridor hangout where people just go in between sessions and, you know, bump into people virtually.
Sure. Yeah. Or maybe have other reasons to get better. I mean, I've been thinking about ways to get UDS back to its roots where it's, you know, more low-key engineers working with engineers. It had, right, had gotten to be a pretty big event, you know.
Yes, so. with sort of keynotes from Mark and announcing new ideas and new directions and things. Certainly my experiences at some of the UDS, I guess 4 years ago, 5 years ago, were much more about, as you say, developers and getting people in a room together and chatting and coming up with those ideas in the first place rather than announcing them.
Yeah, well, again, that gets back to just the fact that we're just so much better at planning than we were. You know, my first UDS, I spent like every day in the same room with the desktop team, every hour of every day. And we were, you know, that was all the planning that we had done for the previous 6 months and for the next 6 months. And so just the scope of the project has grown. That's just not enough. You know, we can't wait 6 months for that. So yeah, it's changed a lot, like in that regard. So yeah.
It's one topic that's come up very recently, just today in fact. Colin Watson's introduced the world to click packages on the Ubuntu Devil list. Is that the future of Ubuntu packaging?
No, I don't think it is the future. First of all, it's funny topic, because I remember talking to Michael, to MVO, about this like way back in the day. Like, so this has been something that's been specified and brewing for some number of years. I think it's, you know, what's changed is like someone's actually going to do something about it, it looks like. So I think there is a kind of package that is not totally amenable for devs. And I know as an application developer, I struggled a lot with devs and making devs, and it just seemed like a very complex solution to a simple problem. So I think now that we have like a really proper Ubuntu SDK and the kind of apps that we're making, now is the time for a packaging solution like this. But at the end of the day, there's still going to be complex packages. And, you know, the Debian format for the core operating system, I just, you know, sure, there's room for improvement, but I don't think that it can be really replaced, you know.
Right. So it's not a one size fits all for everything. You envisage like multiple different packaging scenarios in the future.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, I've been like kicking the tires a lot on the SDK, the Ubuntu SDK, and I've written a bunch of apps, and they're just a few QML files, really. And so for those, I think the click packages is a really great solution, especially in combination with the application installation work that the security team's been doing, right? So it's like user will be able to easily get my QML files. Of course, they won't know their QML files, so get my application and then install it, and Ubuntu will be able to run them in a way that even if I try to make a malicious program, it wouldn't be able to execute in a malicious way.
That's quite a new way of thinking for us in the Linux desktop. It sounds very much more like the kind of siloed approach that you get on mobile platforms. Do you think that's us growing up a bit?
I don't know about growing up, maybe. I don't know how to answer that question.
Okay, feel free not to. That's fine.
Well, I feel like it's the right tool. It's the right solution given the SDK that we have now. It's the right time.
Well, we've just got time for one last question, and it's, I think, probably the most important one. When are we going to be able to get our hands on a mobile phone running Ubuntu?
Well, we target the Nexus and the Nexus 4 as our reference platforms today. And we set a goal that by the end of May, that you could use Ubuntu Touch as your daily phone, which means it'll make and receive calls, it'll work with your contacts, it'll do a SMS, and you'll be able to get a web browser working over data. So you should be able to do everything that you need to do. So
I think what Tony actually means is, when are you going to individually post him a phone?
Okay.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I thought the question I was avoiding was when can we buy one in a store? Yeah.
So when can we buy one in a store?
Well, so, you know, one thing that Canonical does bring to the table is a team of very skilled and connected commercial people who know how to go talk to big companies and convince them to do crazy things and convince them to do smart things. So they're all working busily, but I think I think the first thing is that we have to get to 13.10 and really make this Ubuntu Touch and do a great job with it. So let's, I want to focus on our part first, which is to make the thing to sell, you know. But, I would hazard a guess that next year, you know, people will be buying Ubuntu phones.
Cool.
Look forward to it.
Yes. Well, thank you very much indeed for taking some time to talk to us from all the way over there in Seattle.
Cool. Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Really
thanks,
appreciate
it. Cheers. Thanks, Rick.
Thank
Cheers.
You.
Bye.
And now it's time for some command line love.
Oh yes.
What's up this week?
So there's a I may have mentioned this previously, but I use Vim for taking notes in text files. But I want
like everybody should.
Exactly. But I want them to be on all my computers. So I put them in shared storage in Ubuntu One. So they're synchronized. But some of them have got sensitive stuff in, so I want them encrypted.
So you don't trust Ubuntu One with your data?
No, it's just that if it synchronizes to all my computers and I'm sat here at your house and someone breaks into my house and steals my computer, there's a potential that they might see my stuff.
Or Sophie just hacks you.
Got out of that. Got out of that quickly. So I want to encrypt my stuff for whatever reason.
Okay.
And I'd already created like a whole load of these notes, these text files, and I wanted to encrypt all of them at once. And I started, and I was using GPG.
Yeah.
And GPG is fairly good on the command line. I mean, I'm sure there's GUI tools for it, but being this is command line love, I did GPG --- encrypt *.txt basically.
Yeah.
But that doesn't actually work. You can't do them like that multiple. So I started writing a little script that did a loop from like for each file. And then I started running into trouble because each of the files, some of them had spaces in the names, and I had all sorts of trouble with my script. And then I Googled a bit and I found that GPG actually has a command line option ---
multifile.
Does work with *.txt.
Exactly. So GPG --- multifile and --- encrypt *.txt, bosh.
So you get this isn't creating like an encrypted archive of all of them. This is creating an encrypted version of each.
So if you've got 100 text files in a directory, you run that command, you get 100 encrypted text files in that directory plus your original 100 text files.
And so that people don't have to get through the encryption.
Well, no. So once I guaranteed that I had encrypted them all by uncrypting one or two of them, I then deleted all *.txt. Job done. It was brilliant. I was so totally unbelievably happy about this that I didn't have to break out my bash scripting. And that's it. GPG --- multifile. It's excellent.
Excellent. And it can decrypt.
Well, I don't need to. I'm sure it can.
Right.
But I don't need to.
Okay.
I'm sure it probably can, GPG --- decrypt.
Oh, because you'd only decrypt individual files.
Exactly. And because I use Vim, and I've got a Vim plugin that automatically decrypts as I open the file,
that's clever,
and re-encrypts it as I save the file, I don't really care about doing them all en masse.
So this was only initial.
The files you already
this
had.
This was the initial encrypt everything that's in there so I don't have to go through and save each one encrypted.
Cool.
That is just brilliant.
And now it's time for some feedback. First up, Nadri Majdor left a comment on our website.
Can we have GNU/Linux logos on www.ubuntu.com main page? I was quite successful getting my business environment accepted and using Ubuntu. However, when I try to communicate the idea that we should contribute something back, my bosses look at the main page and conclude that they are sitting on a pile of money and basically ignore me.
To be fair, Mark Shuttleworth is sitting on a pile of money.
Okay, he is a guy. He is not Canonical or Ubuntu.
Very true.
And Canonical are not sitting on a pile of money.
So Ubuntu.com needs to make it more obvious.
Oh, we should just turn the page into something that looks like a GeoCities page from 5 years ago so that so we look like we're in poverty.
You've got to get the businesses using the software.
Yeah, the problem is that the website needs to fulfill more than one requirement. And one requirement is, you know, we're now advertising our services to, you know, fairly large telecoms companies and carriers and trying to look professional. But at the same time, remember that we've got all these roots of community people and developers who've created stuff. And, you know, it's a difficult balance to master.
Interestingly, when the email came in about the, and I saw a bit about the GNU Linux logos, and after I'd thought for a bit and remembered what the GNU Linux logos actually were, Tux the Penguin and that GNU playing recorder or whatever it is, I looked on all of the other distro websites that I could think of. So Red Hat, SUSE, Fedora, Mint, none of them have GNU Linux, any reference to Tux the Penguin.
Every site has its own branding.
Yeah.
I mean, we keep getting this meme that Ubuntu doesn't mention Linux anywhere on Ubuntu.com, and that's been said numerous times. And actually, we do. If you go to Ubuntu.com and click About Ubuntu, like the first line says Ubuntu is a Linux distribution or something like that. But I think we would we would have to keep on going down that road in order to please everyone. So, you know, it's a Linux distribution. Okay, well, you also need to mention all these other projects, and you also need to have these logos, and you also need to have a copy of the, you know, GNU GPL and the FSF manifesto, and, you know, you cannot please everyone.
But having those logos wouldn't show what he's wanting to show anyway, actually.
No, I mean, if we kept the website looking professional, clean and polished, and then slapped a GNU playing a whistle on the side, I don't think, well, okay, if it could be done aesthetically, I still don't think it would make it us look like we needed the money.
No, it wouldn't. You'd have to know what GNU Linux was, and if they're trying to convince a business environment to adopt Ubuntu in the first place, chances are they wouldn't recognise what the logo means.
I think it's a slightly contrived scenario myself.
I think probably the best way to support Canonical is to take out support contracts for various versions of Ubuntu.
Or when you download Ubuntu, you know.
Yeah, but as a corporate, if you want to support.
Oh, yeah, sorry, if you're, yes, you're right.
If you want to give something back, then
pay for a support contract.
Yeah.
Even like the lowest one where you get a few number of calls a year and you get to speak to our excellent support people in London or Montreal or wherever they are.
They're worth every penny.
They are. They're lovely people.
Okay, so Nadrimmer Justor also asked,
when will the Ubuntu webpage get community and documentation as one of the main categories? We discussed this last week, that it had been redesigned and community had been bumped off in favour of phone, tablet, TV and other links.
Because the community site was being redone.
Yes.
And it will be restored once the community site has been finished.
Yeah, Daniel's been chasing everyone to try and get that finished. And there's a preview beta draft, that's the word I'm looking for. Draft
Bless.
Version. Oh gosh.
It's a beta. A draft.
There's a draft version of the site up, and I mean, it's not even got a domain associated with it. If you know the IP address, you can go to it because it's just for us to review it and make sure all the text is right. So we've been like making sure there's no grammatical errors and typos in the community team in Ubuntu, not just Canonical people, but Ubuntu people have been contributing copy to that site and fixing errors and stuff. So, yeah, we're nearly there. But, yeah, it's not a giant scheme to block the community out. It's just the site wasn't ready.
Stop, it's not ready yet.
I wondered exactly where that would come in.
As your friend Christoph Waltz would say.
From Germany. Federico from Argentina emailed to say,
I heard you talking about how our benevolent dictator for life conceded that clockwise is the positive way. I'd like to mention a few indisputable facts. In maths and trigonometry, positive angles are measured anti-clockwise. Positive line integrals are the ones measured anti-clockwise. In Olympics competitions involving a circuit, like running and cycling, the athletes go anti-clockwise. The same happens with car, horse and dog races, so there seem to be contradictory signs on the matter, and I was disappointed nobody raised any concerns about it in the last show. Shame on us all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. Where can you see a horse and a car and a dog racing each other? Because I want to go
Top Gear.
Excellent.
Yes. So different cultures have different interpretations of what's positive.
Well, yeah, I mean, he has a point. I mean, if you sit and think about it, I'm sure there are some things, you know, when cats lay down, they go around anti-clockwise before they sit down. Yeah, I'm sure there's loads of things that you could identify are one way or the other.
I now can't think of any positive ones other than a clock.
That's why it's called clockwise. A car wheel, when you're going forwards, it goes, it depends on which
side you're looking.
Look at the near side, it doesn't. If you're driving on the left. Right. Oh, man.
Anyway.
We asked for feedback on the last show. Jack Weirden tweeted,
needs more dishwashers and cats and possibly cats washing dishes.
Well, that'd be a neat trick. You wouldn't need a dishwasher then.
I know, it'd save a lot of work, wouldn't it?
Our cats do try to wash our dishes sometimes if we leave them long enough.
yes, so do ours.
That makes us sound disgusting, Laura.
Is this them jumping in the sink and sploshing around to try and clean them again?
You know, if they leave them like 3 weeks on the side, then the cats, you know.
reminds me of being at university.
That reminds me. A friend who lives in New York in a little apartment so doesn't have space for a litter tray, they've actually trained their cat to wee in the toilet. And they put up a video to prove it.
Wow.
Wow, I'm not going to be watching that.
I'm just going to share that with you. It was very, very cool.
Thanks for that, Laura.
And finally,
some value
and finally Avidius 2 has pointed out that Alan's crush, Christoph Waltz, is in fact Austrian and not German.
That doesn't diminish my love.
That's good. Shows it's not just superficial.
Exactly.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that tickles, titillates, or taunts you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. We really would like to hear from you, so go on, do your duty, keep calm, and compose an email.
Is that a new one?
I have a large number of them.
Oh, wow. Looking forward to the rest.
It says track 7, this one.
Track 7 of 3,800.
Oh, the minor variations on the theme.
Well, thanks all for listening. Join us on Wednesday the 22nd of May at 7:30 UTC. That's 8:30 UK time.
In the
for
evening.
Our next live episode. Yes.
Alan managed to convert 24-hour clock to 12-hour and not say PM.
Yeah, because it just sounded clumsy saying 1930 UTC or 2030 UTC.
Fair enough.
But it's 2030 BST, don't get confused.
Right. Yes. Excellent. I'm sure that's clarified everything for everybody.
In 2 weeks' time from now,
there is a countdown on our website which tells you.
Yes.
And it always works.
Well, join us next time. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.